Plus minus.
Tim Kawakami deserves all the credit.
Plus minus.
That is a word right there.
I didn't remember what said. What'd you say?
Fluffle.
Plus minus.
Yeah, like you, Marcus Thompson.
Marcus always tell the truth. Plus minus.
The only thing that I would say to Ethan Strauss is that he's a pretty damn good reporter. He's well plus respected.
Minus. I think he got the highest plus minus in the season in NBA history.
Welcome to another episode of Warriors Plus Minus. We are all here, the entire gang. We've got Ethan Strauss, our superstar author and ratings expert, and James Wiseman expert, spin move master.
No, we've got Slater's Wiseman.
We've got Anthony Slater. I don't know. I think you're trying to take his spot with your Wiseman pieces.
No, man. I don't know. No, he got benched in the second half, man. He's all, yeah, Slater's now.
You off Wiseman now.
Huh? I always loved LaMelo. LaMelo I was the biggest fan of.
Strauss is in the loony lane. That's where he's at.
He's going to die in the loony lane. We've got Anthony Slater, our superstar, most valuable player, and the boss man.
We do not have the boss man.
No Tim? I just asked if everybody was here. I was like, yeah.
Yeah, well, I thought you meant everybody who was planning on being on the podcast. Oh, Tim is getting much needed break.
He's on vacation, man. Much deserved break.
Let's party then. Let's go. No Tim in the building?
Substitute teacher, baby. It's let's talk about anything.
After the second game of the season, we started mapping out the Warriors' schedule, and we were prognosticating about what they needed to do on the homestand. Might have been after the Detroit win.
But it was.
The Warriors now sit at what, 4-2 at home
on the 4-2 on the homestand,
and yeah, with Indiana left. I mean, I know, yes, they technically have won it, but have they done all they needed to do far beyond anything you imagined they would do on this road on this homestand?
I wouldn't say far beyond. Look, we thought they might come together. This was a realistic possibility. Steph Curry explosion. I think the Steph Curry 62-pointer in a win was more realistic to think about than Steph Curry going 2 of 16 and they still win a game. But yeah, I mean, look, we said 4-3 would have been a success. That includes a win over the Clippers where they came back from, what, 22 down? You beat the Blazers 1 out of 2. You wanted to know, could they split those two series? They did. And then other than that, you blow out a bad team in the Kings. You handle the Raptors. Probably should have lost, but they're getting clutch moments from Damian Lee now. He's really kind of saved the early season for them. And yeah, if they beat the Pacers and you go 5-2 on this homestand, it is an electric homestand.
It's good considering some of the things that have gone on and just frankly how bad Oubre has been. This is easy to imagine happening if Oubre was his Phoenix self. I mean, I think we would say this would happen, right? That this would be the result. I don't know if it's impressive or it's surprising is that they've got somebody in their starting lineup who, just in terms of output, because the energy is there, he is playing defense, he is competing, but he's probably been the worst player in basketball who is in a rotation, just as far as production. And so they've got that anchor that's been tethered to them, and they've still been able to eke out these victories. So that's what's impressive.
Yeah, I mean, the bench has been awesome. You know, you got Lee's basically 50% for three. Mulder's coming in random games going 4-4 from three. Bazemore has reestablished himself as like a nightly good rotation. He had three blocks last night. And then it's funny, we go back to those first couple of games when we were talking about the wing problem around the Warriors, right? This Wiggins and Oubre struggle. Andrew Wiggins, they played 10 games. He was really bad in the first two. He's been really good in the next eight, like cumulatively. Like the guy has been probably, I would say, through 10 NBA games is like a fringe all-star right now.
What's funny is that, I'll just quickly say that all these Wolves fans tell you, oh my God, you're gonna get it. You're gonna see what we're so frustrated with, and oh, you don't think so, and you're talking yourself into it. And what's funny is that Wiggins offensively has effectively been who he's always been, and maybe even a little worse. But the fact that he's D'ing up to the degree that he is makes him palatable and isn't unenjoyable to watch. Just playing defense and averaging, I don't know, maybe over twice as many blocks or a block rate that's twice what it was in Minnesota, I think has just made him a player that's far easier to appreciate.
Well, and it's beyond the blocks. It's like individual defense. Like, it's a possession he doesn't get a stat on, but I mean, you saw him get the stop on Siakam last night. But if you really look at the whole fourth, he got like three isolations.
Such smart defense, though, like on that Siakam stop.
It's bouncy. It's lateral quickness. It's alertness, right? He's better individually than in the team setting, probably from an alert standpoint. But he just looks like a really good defensive player right now. And that really changes who he is in the landscape of the league, right? Because suddenly if you're a 18-point-per-game scorer who's also, you know, a pretty good wing defender on the best players in the league and can even slide down and guard a Lillard McCollum if you're playing Portland, let's say. Yeah, that's a pretty solid third best player on a, I don't want to say contender, but like, a, you know, 4-5 seed.
Yeah, it's, for me, that's, this is why the 4-2 to this point is a bit more surprising. I think you're right. If maybe the season had started different and players look like them, their normal, like regular production, it's like, yeah, whatever. All right. But it's the revelations that have happened in the process. To me, it's just like, they're 4-2 because Wiggins is amazing, right? They're 4-2 because Kerr, like, kind of backed off of some things and changed a little bit, you know, sat some guys. Like, for me, I didn't see this coming this soon, this fast. Like, the two games they lost, they got handled pretty easily, but they didn't have that many, like, they should have lost. Toronto, they should have lost, so at best, or at worst, they'd be 3-3. Like, this is not one of those things where they just won three close games and got lucky a few times. Like, last night was their lucky game. I don't know if I saw it coming together this fast in the way that it has to me. Like, especially after those first two games and then barely beating Chicago. It was like, yeah. I mean, even Steve Kerr was talking about, yo, give me 2 months. And it turned out he needed a week and a half, right? But it, to me, just how, like, how it's all worked out is a little bit surprising to me.
I would just say, and this can lead us down a road of a conversation we should probably have as I look at every Twitter alert every 2 minutes right now, and it's like a league increasingly heading towards potentially a pause in the season.
Absolutely.
Yeah. One thing I think we underestimated early in the season was the cost of having Draymond Green and James Wiseman, who would become their starting power forward and center, sitting out training camp. Draymond ends up sitting out the first four games, but, you know, he's still not even fully back where he wants to be conditioning-wise. And, like, you know, you're supposed to install your top 10 defense that Steve Kerr is saying that they're going to have and starting to look like they might actually have. And you're doing that without your rookie center and your defensive anchor. So early in the season, I think we underestimated the impact of that. Now, I think what we're seeing is across the league, there's a lot of teams dealing with coronavirus stoppages, you know, guys in quarantine. I mean, you have teams who have like 7-8 guys out right now, and the Warriors aren't dealing with that. You know, the Warriors have not had one issue since their intake process. The Wiseman Green stuff was during the intake process, where now it's kind of allowed them to settle into a rhythm while most of the league is so unsettled that they might have to actually pause the season.
And you get to start to wonder, like, is there just a matter of time? Or are they just really being on top of it?
I was thinking about that because it's funny. This is exploding all over the league. And I'm not going to say that I was unaware because you see the reports, you see the headlines. But we're in a little bit of a bubble where the Warriors play and nobody's out with COVID. And it just seems like the season is going along. And meanwhile, really, it looks like that scene in The Dark Knight Rises where Hines Ward is returning the kick and all of the football field is just collapsing behind him into the ground, but somehow he's running.
What movie was that again?
The Dark Knight Rises.
Okay. You know why I always think, every time I think of that scene, for some reason, I think it's The Last Boy Scout. And then somebody has to tell me, no, that's Batman. But in The Last Boy Scout, there's not a same scene, but there's like a football explosion scene. For some reason, I'm old and that comes to mind. But yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
I think it's a decent metaphor for what the Warriors are doing right now. I think they're Hines Warden the season.
Hey, Hines Ward scored, right? You know what
I'm
saying?
Yeah, I don't know. Did that count? I mean, that's a good question. Statistically, did that go on?
Nah, that's touchdown. Come on. You got to give them that before death touchdown. Let's do it.
Yeah.
It was impressive that they went through an entire four-game East Coast road swing to start the season and did not encounter any of these issues.
I almost feel like that might be the perfect time to do it, though, right? Like, just be stuck in a hotel room.
What might also be interesting, and maybe we'll come to find this out, is the San Francisco / California protocols and the seriousness that it's being taken in the Bay Area might be helping the Warriors, right? I mean, there's teams that play in cities that are like basically open right now.
Wide open, right? Yeah. Watching those football games, yo, was kind of wild. Just seeing that many people.
I don't know together. If you guys know this, but the Houston Rockets are having like 4,000 fans in their stadiums for games right now.
It's incredible that they can field 4,000 people to see that. No.
So a normal Houston Rockets crowd. Not.
Yeah, yeah. About as loud. About as loud.
Ouch.
Toyota Center running as quiet as a Prius. Anyway.
Well, there are reports, by the way, I think we should say that they're going to meet tomorrow. The NBA Board of Governors set an emergency meeting.
Yeah, no, by the time people are listening to this, there might be more news on this, so I don't want to sound like we're too outdated. At this point, we're talking, there has been no pause.
I'm just saying, like, they're going to meet tomorrow. It's an indoor pool party. It's just, they're really throwing caution to the wind. I mean, this is a whole other topic I'm probably going to talk about in my podcast, but the NBA protocols, that's a hard word to pronounce, protocols, loosey-goosey compared to what they had going on in the summer. I mean, I think that we weren't expecting that because we kind of trusted the NBA since they had done such a great job over the summer.
You don't think the honor system works? They don't have bracelets or nothing, huh? They don't have...
No. It's like, what do we do? Dude, we could start interviewing these players based on the protocols, you know? Like, we haven't really thought about it, but if you just go on the road, apparently as long as you are declared a personal friend, you can go up there. So I don't think it's our company that they want, but it seems like this was predictable, I guess is what I'm saying, based on the rules and regulations.
In some ways where the Warriors have lucked out, like, did you see this Jason Tatum, Bradley Beal situation where Jason Tatum, like the Celtics play the Wizards, is a great game. Bradley Beal, by the way, has been awesome. We might even need to do a Bradley Beal segment.
Free Bradley Beal, GoFundMe.
Oubre for Bradley Beal, straight up.
They're both from St. Louis. Jason Tatum and Bradley Beal have a, you know, great game. After the game, they come together, like slap high five, talking in each other's ear, probably sit there and have maybe, let's say, a minute conversation, no mask, obviously. And then the next day, Jason Tatum tests positive for coronavirus. And Jason Tatum obviously has to go into quarantine, but they go, there's a 1 minute video of Bradley Beal and Jason Tatum having a maskless conversation like 12 hours ago. Uh-oh, Bradley Beal, star player for the Wizards, who, you know, this has nothing to do with his own team. He didn't know Jason Tatum had that. He is now in quarantine and he's out, I think, at least 7 days. So the Warriors have also avoided that unluckiness, right? Where maybe you play a team that had an outbreak.
Talk about lucky. Seth Curry was pulled in the middle of a game, you know, and the question is like, hey, he was in the game. Shouldn't everybody be pulled? And they decided to play the game anyway. But imagine how lucky the Warriors are that Seth wasn't in the Bay for a vacation. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's the randomness of it. It's like he got all the way into the game, you know, before they, like, I'm trying to figure out, did they take the test at pregame?
The Grizzlies pulled Valasciunas at halftime, and it was like, whoa, what's going on here? And then he's like, says the next day, false alarm. But he, like, you know, he's their starting center. He's good. And he had to sit out the second half because they thought something might have gone down that apparently didn't. Like, it is a very odd season. And Ethan is right. Like, it is going on completely separate from the Warriors. They haven't had any issues. I mean, you know, the Eric Housen situation. But really, like, on the court, it hasn't, like, affected their rotation at all or any of that.
It's going to, though, right? Like, it's going to happen.
It seems like something's going to happen, yeah, to delay. Like,
it's unavoidable.
Yeah, eventually, Hines Ward looks back at the end of that scene and goes, oh, my God. And that might be what occurs just in
terms of... He turns around and goes, oh, my God, did I just win the Super Bowl? Is that going to be the Warriors? Oh, my God, are we the NBA champs by default right now?
If nobody else can play, that is the technicality. So one way or the other, either they're going to catch it or it seems like there's going to be some kind of pause because this is just rolling. But with coronavirus, it always seems like there's more that I don't know than that I do know. And it's just not so predictable. And people thought that the bubble wasn't going to work. I'm shocked the bubble worked, right? I'm shocked. For
yeah,
all
you
we
were
know,
super skeptical, I remember.
Oh, yeah. They had a situation where they did pause it, but for a reason that wasn't corona. But they got it off the ground. They completed it, which is impressive. And for all we know, it feels like this is going to go on for a while, but this could be the peak. We don't know. We don't.
You do hear from people around the league that they think January will be the worst month. And, like, you know, more and more people are getting vaccinated by the day. Everything you know, hints that we're heading on an uphill, you know, trajectory back towards normal life. Now, how long will that take? That's kind of the big question. Obviously, there's a lot of other things going on in the country right now that it's just, you know, intensifying everything, where I would not be surprised if they pause the season, but they've kind of built it in, right? They haven't even made the second half of the schedule for the season where you could just push this week of games coming up, let's say, put it in the second half. And at the end of the day, either you got to push the playoffs back a week or two or something like that, or you cut off, you know, an extra 7 games instead of 72, you're playing 65, like whatever, you know. So I think it can be done. It's just weird from a Warrior standpoint where it's like they could keep playing these games because they don't have current issues.
Also, how much does the stoppage hurt them, right? If they are developing right now and they found the groove when other teams haven't, if this thing stops for 14 days, does that hurt them? Does it help them because it gives a few people rest that need, or does it kind of break the rhythm? Maybe it helps Oubre, who could use a reset.
You know, it's funny you say that. I think it would help Oubre and Wiseman, right? Wiseman, I think, has got enough of a sample to, like, we know what his long-term ceiling potentially could be, but he does kind of seem like he might need, like, a mental break to just think about the lessons he learned, right?
Or Oubre, or Wiseman just needs to play not with Oubre. I mean, I do think that is a bit of a hindrance to have him there. I mean, Oubre is minus 55 on the season, I think. By the way, I think Damian Lee is over 40. Plus, which is a contrast. And look, I know Steve likes defense. I'm aware of the political dynamic of having invested so much money in the Oubre acquisition, but you do wonder how much longer this goes on. And it was surprising to nearly see him close out the game because I do think he's killing the productivity of the starters right now. He just is. It's hard to have a guy in there who's not being guarded when they already don't have a lot of shooting in that lineup.
We talked about this, Slater, like at some point, like I know everything is about getting Wiggins going, but it's just going to have to be about getting everybody else going. If he started this season with his salary, forget the luxury tax part, but his salary, and if he started the season and Kerr said, we're going to make you the sixth man, is he somehow less valuable? Would people be like, nah, he can't be a sixth man making that much money? I don't know why somehow bringing him off the bench means it's a waste of money. That was possible from the beginning.
What's interesting, though, is they've developed a really nice formula in the rotation beyond the starters that you would be disrupting. You know, suddenly you're saying, hey, I know Eric Paschal as a small ball center that's kind of eating up possessions, and this crew that has been very good for the Warriors in this homestand. I don't know the exact plus minus numbers, but like they're the reason they came back against the Clippers. They're the reason they've stayed in a lot of these games. Suddenly you're adding Oubre to that. Maybe you're blasting up the rest of the rotation, you know? So it's tough. And I also do understand the idea of, we all know the Warriors are not title contenders this season, but the best version of the Warriors, let's say, is like a dangerous 4, 5, 6 seed, includes a really good defensive lineup that includes Oubre, right?
I get it, but he's got to play better, man. He can't be and beyond the misses, I mean, he's messing up some basic stuff, and I know that Draymond castigated.
Passes are insane.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, the entry passes, or
it's
just
unbelievable.
And I know Draymond castigated everybody and all of us for not knowing what we're talking about, which is why we ask other people, because we don't know everything on the court. But I do know that when Steph Curry's coming towards you and you're standing in the corner, you get the hell out of the corner. I mean, how does that happen repeatedly? And you can see the frustration visible with Steph. It's just a situation where he's playing too badly to justify remaining in the starting lineup. It is having an impact, and I know that there's a lot of feel good going around because the Warriors came back from the big deficit against the Clippers, right? A hole they were in, I think, in large part due to Oubre's minutes, by the way, and they just beat the Raptors. But I think in both those cases, I mean, I don't want to say it's a little bit of fool's gold, because there are good things happening with the bench, as you're noting, but it seems like they're getting a little bit lucky, and their process, I'll put it this way, their result right now is a little bit better than the process.
I don't know how he kills the second unit, by the way. It's not like they're running like sets and that where he's got to be. It's just defense and run. We will be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is what I would say to you two. For them to maximize themselves, they need to get Oubre back to being the Kelly Oubre of Phoenix. Whatever you think the best path to that is, Steve Kerr clearly thinks the best path is, hey, play him through it, keep the starting lineup that they think is going to be the long-term starting lineup. He's going to get through the slump. Let's pump him up. He keeps pumping him up in press conferences, which is, you know, that's a normal Steve Kerr thing to do. It's what he does. If you guys disagree that that's the way to go, maybe. But the reality is they can't give up on him, because for them to be their best selves, he's got to be a contributor.
I agree. I just don't think there's only one way to look at it. I think he can be that coming off the bench. If before the season began, anybody said he's going to be our sixth man, our super sub, nobody would have been like, what are you doing? Like, it was always part of the equation that it was possible. Like, I mean, it never was irrational. I think him playing with the second unit and they're kind of free. Like, part of the problem, he's not grasping how to play with Steph. Like, that's part of the problem. So yes, if you take him off with Steph, that's that. You don't have, he doesn't have to deal with that. He doesn't have to worry about screen and reload. Who's going to screen and relocate for? That's not that big of an issue anymore. And I think taking that mental block out of the way can kind of help him find his game. I just don't think moving him to the second unit is this grand emotion. Like, to me, I mean, that's most of his career. By the way, Wiggins is minus 45, by the way. I didn't see that one. Jeez.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of that is, I mean, Wiggins gets the worst of both worlds because he's got to deal with the Oubre minutes and he's got to try to float the second unit. Yeah, I think that Oubre's is a little more telling. Oubre is almost exclusively in lineups where he's flanked by a lot of talent. I think his minutes are pretty matched to Steph's. And to what Marcus is saying, Damian Lee knows how to play with Steph. Oubre does not. And so it just doesn't seem like this is a starting lineup that's working too well, even if, hey, maybe the turnaround will come. Maybe it will happen. Maybe he'll start to get it. I think what's more likely is that the shot will come online than that he'll get it. This just seems like something that should have been fixed by now if it was ever going to be fixed.
I think he'll still get there. I do think, 10 games is, especially with a minimal camp and minimal preseason after that long layoff, I don't think that's unreasonable. We've seen players slump before. I think it might not be an osmosis type of fix, right? It might not be like, oh, he'll get it eventually. Like you might need to do something so he can get it.
One of the biggest problems is like the way he's going about breaking out of the slump, which is like ramping up the aggression almost, where it's like he's gonna shoot 6 times in the first 6 minutes because he's like, I'm gonna show that tonight's the night I break out
and
of it.
Threes too. He keeps shooting threes like he's got.
Where it's like, if he just said, if he was like, you know what, I'm shooting like Andre Robertson right now, why don't I just play like, you know, be the Andre Robertson type where it's like I just focus solely on just defensive disruption, and like, sure, I slash, and if I get an open layup, I'm going to try to shoot it, and if they leave me absolutely wide open for three and it swings to me, okay, I guess I have to. But the problem is he's kind of like hunting shots right now, and like, at this point, he's kind of a defensive specialist hunting shots. That's kind of the problem. One of the many, I guess.
I'm okay with it if he hunts better shots. He's hunting threes. Like, I mean, if you play basketball any length of time, you've heard a coach tell you, like, you work your way inside out, right? Even Steph, when he's missing a three, he's going to drive. Draymond was
problem hit, is his, you know, drives have been so wild and ineffective, too, though.
Probably a little bit more effective than them threes, though. But I do think that's where they need to say, hey, Kelly, do these things. Instead of saying, he'll figure it out, say, all right, here's what we want you to do. You get an open three, take two dribbles into the elbow. We just going to take all elbow jumpers. All elbow jumpers. That's what you're going to do. Like, give him a blueprint for success instead of just presuming. I don't know what they're doing. Like, we're not in practice, so maybe they are doing this stuff, I don't know, but it definitely feels like they're just expecting, like, to wake up one morning and Uber is back, and it just might take, like, the way he's playing makes me think nobody's telling him to do something different, and maybe they are telling him to do something different and he's just not doing anything different, but he's taking the same shots he took in game two. And it's like, dude, you have to make the adjustment. I don't know why he's not doing that, though.
Per NBA.com, and I think this is probably for per 100% possessions, with Oubre on the court, Steph is minus 5.4. With Oubre off the court, he's plus 4.2. I think he's tanking these dudes' numbers. I mean, I think he is right now. It's a problem. It's a really big problem. And it feels to me like they dodged two bullets, just not just with Corona, but just in the game results as of late.
Ethan, if Marcus Thompson coached an NBA team, would they lead the league in mid-range jumpers?
I think Marcus and Steve are the same, man. I think they're the same. They both believe the same thing, which is that is not your primary weapon, but every now and again, it's the thing you need to go to if it's being given up by the defense to keep the defense honest.
I believe in counters. Like, I believe, like, if you're in the NBA, man, like, me, if I'm playing, I got my one thing and that's it. But these dudes are too good to just do one thing. Like, it doesn't work that way. You got to have a counter. Like, look at Steph. Look at Wiggins, right? These dudes have multiple things. Well,
Wiggins will certainly take a 17-footer.
He'll also take a step-back three. He'll also drive. Like, we're seeing, he'll also post up. Like, when you're struggling, you can't just keep doing the same thing. And also, like, these dudes, all like Steph always talking about, you take what the defense give you. Like, James Harden said, I'm taking what the, man, everybody's giving you the mid-range. It's free money. If you watch Kyrie play,
theoretically, Oubre's a good mid-range shooter.
He should be. I'm sure if he focused on it, he'd be good at it. He's got the jumping ability, because that's just like, get to the spot, jump, and take the shot. Like, get to the spot, jump. Russ does it. But if you watch Kyrie's game, the reason he's unguardable.
Do not tell Kelly Oubre to watch Russell Westbrook tape.
Don't worry. Don't watch Russell Westbrook.
He's kind of playing like a wing version of Russell Westbrook.
He is. Kyrie. Kyrie is unguardable because he scores at all three levels. Like, once he gets by his first man, he just might pull up. You knock down two or three of those, that big man is coming up, and it opens up the drive. It happens every single time. It's a shot that gets abandoned, but the best, Kevin Durant uses it. Like, it's open. They're giving you free money. And with a guy like Steph, the reason I think it's good for him is because he has to work so hard for the other two. Take the easy stuff, the stuff that's less taxing on your body. You only got to beat one man to make a mid-range jumper. You got to beat three or four to get to the rim. So take the two. It's the same two, right? Like, take the mid-range.
If you want an interesting stat, every other Warrior in the starting lineup has a negative plus minus when they play with Oubre and a positive when they don't, other than Wiggins, where it goes from minus 3.4 with Oubre to minus one. So that's kind of crazy.
Sounds like Wiggins is holding Oubre back. That's what it sounds
No. That's clearly been the problem right here. Yeah, so basically you're nearly at a point where every starting player is in the positive without Oubre and in the negative with Oubre.
Let me tell you what's Oubre's biggest problem right now. Like, the biggest problem for Oubre. I mean, obviously he's missing three, but like the wings are coming alive. Like, he's the only one who's not, like, Bazemore looks great. Damian Lee looks good. I mean, Mulder's making shots. Wiggins is playing incredible. Like, he's literally the fourth, fifth best player at his position right now.
Wanamaker closed over him the
other day. Yeah, Wanamaker, like, I was putting him as the point guard. But, yeah, if you just talk a perimeter, now he's even further down.
He closed the other day guarding Paul George, which would theoretically be the Oubre job.
Absolutely, be Oubre, right? There are just so many better options right now than him, which is hurting his case, because you could turn to a few places. Like, yeah, that to me is like, yeah, dang. If there were no other options, we'd be like, all right, suck it up. But there's got like three other ones.
Yeah, I know. It is a delicate situation, though. Like, I think sometimes we do skip over not only the political dynamics of like what they paid Oubre, but Kelly Oubre believing that, you know, I don't know, you remember some of his quotes when he got here about like he wants to be a Hall of Famer, like, he wants to be an all-star, you know, he's going to learn from Draymond Green and Steph Curry and all that, and Steve Kerr, and he's in a contract year. You know, this is very important. You know, what happens this season is very important for his next four-year payday, probably. And he's clearly just somebody who, like, is putting a ton of pressure on himself. And dealing with this historic slump is not easy for a coach, for a franchise that's paying what they are, and just, like, this entire situation. I mean, it's tough. And the best thing that's happened to them is, like, they've won through it, as we're saying. So, like, it has given, I think, Steve Kerr more of a runway to, like, hey, you know.
We were at a point somewhere in the game yesterday, and it changed, I think, because Oubre hit a three. We were at a point where if Wiseman missed his next 35 three-pointers, he would have then the same three-point percentage as Oubre. Like, this is insane. This is crazy. I've never seen anything like it, I guess is what I'm saying. And maybe if you believe in regression to the mean and the law of averages, it's going to eventually course correct. But as Tim has been saying, there are limits. There are limits to it.
I do think he'll get back to who he is. I mean, he still does some things well. It's clearly in his head. It's very clearly a mental thing. It's not an ability thing. It's a mental thing. And if that's the case, I mean, you kind of have to lean on the fact that at some point he'll get it. I do think 10 games is pretty early, but I mean, in a 72-game season, it's later than what 10 games normally mean. So I'm with you, Slater. Like, they don't beat their ceiling without Oubre being Oubre. I just don't know how many games before they do something to help him become Oubre instead of just expecting it to happen. And maybe that's bringing him off the bench.
Well, clearly they feel that it's playing him through it. Maybe they'll
come to another decision.
But, I mean, Ethan made an interesting point early where, like, the wider scope, biggest, you know, development this season is, like, what can you turn Wiseman into in year one? What is he going to look like going into year two when maybe, you know, you're getting Klay Thompson back? There's more of a hunger to chase a championship maybe next year. Like, you want a maximized version of 20-year-old, 21-year-old James Wiseman. And if Oubre is affecting that, that is a long-term problem.
I would argue that he is. I would argue that Wiseman is not well served by being surrounded by guys who aren't being guarded, especially when he's trying to develop the seal game, the roll game. It's a lot easier for teams to just crash down and stop that roll and stop that lob if they don't have to guard guys. It just is. And yeah, he would be much better served, I think, playing with Damian Lee in that role than with Kelly Oubre right now.
What did you guys think of him not going back to Wiseman last night? Because, like, Wiseman, it was obvious not to close with him 2 games ago when, like, the bench just brought them back against the Clippers. Wiseman was struggling against Ibaka. And I know Toronto's a smart team, and there were Wiseman mistakes yesterday, but there were, like, what did he score? Like, 12 points in, like, 17 minutes?
Yeah, and some good plays.
Boucher was, like, really kind of giving the smaller lineups some issues. By the way, Chris Boucher, former two-way Warriors guy, I think he had, like, 7 blocks last night.
He was swiping everything.
I thought he was going to go back to Wiseman with like 6 minutes left, and he just never did.
I mean, it's always his inclination, right? I need rebounding. I need defense, right? It's always his thing. So I was surprised that he didn't too. I thought at some point, especially when they're not getting the boards, it's like, all right, he's going to go back. But the fact that he didn't means I think he's I think he's feeling like, yo, we got to get these wins. This is the saving grace, right? This is the thing that's getting us through it. But, yeah, I fully expected him to go back to Wiseman at some point. And there was a part where it's like, yo, right now, no, Steph can't get going. What you need is the Curry-Wiseman pick and roll. And he was just like, nah, let's keep running off ball.
By the way, and this is totally understandable from a Wiseman perspective, he looked kind of frustrated on the bench. You know, at one point he walked down to the exercise bike, which is typically a sign of, like, you know, from what I've gathered early on, that he's just like not too pleased the fact that he hasn't been put back in the game yet. And it doesn't matter. I mean, he's 19. This is such a long process with him. And I do understand Steve's decision not to, but I thought he probably should have been rewarded last night for a better game with some fourth quarter minutes, but yeah, who knows?
Man, this is part of it, yo. This is part of it.
I don't think he was bad. I mean, maybe I missed something the coaches saw, but like, I thought he was pretty good, and so it was very surprising. And I mean, not to get back on this, my main takeaway down the stretch, and they pulled him at the very end, was they're closing with Oubre? Like, this is unbelievable. This is completely crazy.
I thought they would put Wiseman in because all Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet was doing was like putting their head down and getting to the rim. And they didn't have anybody there. Like, once they got past their defender, that was it. So I thought he'd bring him back in for that. But you could just see how I see why he was nervous about this team switching, about them switching everything and Wiseman not being able to keep up. But for me, like, part of the development is, yeah, you sat, you know, why'd you sit? Yeah, get mad and earn your minutes back. Like, that's
He wasn't a force defensively. He wasn't really protecting the rim, and maybe that is the thing. That's the first order priority, and maybe that was the message that was being sent.
Yeah, it's a balance for him early on where his offense is ahead of his defense. His theoretical job early in his career was to be, you know, do the defense, the offense will come to you later in your career, kind of. But all of his best plays right now are like, oh man, did
but
you see
like,
him go
yeah,
in transition?
Nah, let me get these
that.
Buckets.
Well, he's just like, he's getting these highlight buckets just because they're going to come to him because he's so physically gifted with some of this
but
stuff.
Even the shots he's taking is like a dude who's looking for his offense first, right? Like, some of these, like, he's taking long step back twos. He's looking off dudes. He's taking shots early in the shot clock.
Yeah, part of that's what Ethan's saying is when you're on the floor with Oubre and you're like, oh no, if it gets to him, I'm never touching it. It's like, oh, I got the ball this possession. Like, let me do something. And then it becomes like a, you know, your turn type where it just kind of goes around the horn.
I've been trying to eat in more often lately, so I signed up for Home Chef. I've had a few packages come in, and being able to feast on a delicious meal without the long prep and cook times is what drew me to Home Chef over all the other guys. Home Chef's meals are effortless, even for someone like me who isn't making it onto Top Chef anytime soon. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what you're making ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering my listeners 18 free meals, plus free shipping on your first box and free dessert for life at homechef.com/plus. That's homechef.com/plus for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. Homechef.com/plus. Must be an active subscriber to receive the free dessert.
I want to ask you something, Slater. How much more of this from Wiggins do we have to see before, like, you know, the Warriors really are light years?
Maybe for true shooting over 55%. I think that's where you get the light years, is you need it to creep above 55.
I think he is what he is as an offensive player, which, I mean, I don't think he's going to creep much above that. You know, like, he's... He hit three threes last night to make him 20 of 45 from three. I even tweeted out. And then he missed his last seven threes. You know, he finished 3 of 10 from three last night, which is who he is. He's a 33% three-point shooter. But that's just the track record. The defensive stuff is very interesting. He's never been in a defense like this. Clearly, he seems like he could be a very good component of a top 10 defense, which does, in my opinion, change his reputation around the league. But he had, I think the number was 14 really good games to start last season for Minnesota, and we're only at the 10-game mark. And then the Minnesota fans, even at the time, were like, hey, it's only 14. We can't, you know, we've been here before. So he's had larger
They're
samples
so traumatized,
than this.
Right? Yeah. Minnesota fans.
Yeah. he's had larger samples than this where he's looked like a Friends level all-star. So I don't know. I mean, what Steve Kerr is saying is right. He's just, his role on the Warriors is a lot different than it was. He doesn't have to change the franchise. He just kind of has to be himself. He's really just mostly been himself the first 10 games with more alert defense. But that's because he's got Draymond Green behind him too. You know, like there's reasons why he looks better defensively.
And Steph carrying offense. He doesn't really have to. They lowered the bar well enough for him to be able to. I think, like Steve said, like he can do what we're asking him to do. You don't really see. I don't know. I understand the expectation is for him to, you know, have these 15 down games or go back into a shell. But I don't see why he can't keep doing this. Like, it's not that incredible. It's just, I mean, he's averaging 17 and a half. That didn't even register on his career meter.
And it's not efficient. But then again, there are these possessions where it seems like he's bailing out the possession. He often gets the hot potato, right? He often gets the, God, what's the Hollinger term for it? At those end of shot clock plays. So that is
grenade?
A little bit.
Is it the grenade? Kind of gets grenade? Thrown to you?
Something. It's something. So it's a little bit better than what it looks. But yeah, again, it's just a situation where you have to readjust your expectations. If we're expecting what the Wolves fans expected from Wiggins when he was drafted, then yeah, we're going to be pretty disappointed. If we're looking at the situation and going, can you be Harrison Barnes with a little more wiggle in your game? Well, that's doable. And it's easier to be happier with the result.
He's better than Harrison Barnes. That needs to be said.
Yeah, I do think wins will be his saving grace in the end. If he looks and be able to say, yo, we're winning, that's, for me, what Wiggins was being asked to deliver and couldn't. So if he does, if he wins with the Warriors, they'll feel like years. But it's just interesting how, like, yo, he feels like really, like a really good fit. And it feels like it's really working out. And everybody's saying, hold on, hold on. And I wonder how long before you don't have to say that anymore. How long before it's like, yo, this is just who he is.
I think he needs a whole season of it, really.
And a postseason?
I thought he was really going to fit well in the pecking order when Klay Thompson was involved. You know, he was going to be able to not have as much of an offensive burden, be the slasher scorer, be a tag team guy with Klay Thompson. You mentioned the wins. Like, if Klay Thompson was just like a good version of Klay Thompson was suddenly dropped on this team, we would be calling them a fringe contender right now. And then suddenly if Andrew Wiggins is guarding Kawhi Leonard and Paul George with Klay Thompson in a high-intensity seven-game playoff series in the second round of the West Finals, yeah, his reputation takes five leaps upward. But they're probably not going to get that this year. He's probably going to play, presumably, one round. And crickets for Andrew Wiggins.
Well, I'm sorry. It's just like the league is exploding right now. Like, that's a... The league is exploding. There's news coming out a mile a minute. Everybody's debating everything at the same time. They're debating, oh my God, should the league pause? Should the players take vaccines? Do the players want to take vaccines? Are the protocols good enough? Yeah.
The listeners may already know what's going to happen by the time they listen to this. What do you think they should do? Yeah, pause for a little?
The NBA?
Just like the NFL dealt with some of this stuff and just said, we're playing, you know, the Denver
NFL
Broncos.
Power through that.
The Denver Broncos don't have a quarterback. Oh well, find a practice squad receiver.
What was that team? Didn't have any receivers.
Under Armour. The only way out is through. I think is the slogan there. I don't know, man. I would need more information. I would need to know how many people are infected. I would need to know how many guys want to get vaccines, because that's this whole element of this thing, which is, not everybody wants the vaccine. And do you force somebody to take a vaccine if they don't want it? And then what is the mechanism for doing that? And is that ethical at a point in time where maybe we don't know everything about the vaccine? I mean, there are just so many questions right now that I feel as though that I am ill-equipped to answer. And they seem to all be getting raised simultaneously. I don't know. I don't know if a pause is the answer. It seems like it's a possibility and something that should be looked into. The way you have to look at it is, are you at your peak? Because then a pause makes a lot of sense. And it also makes sense that the league started so soon, because we were getting whiplash. We were going, oh my God, the season just ended, now it's starting. Well, one of the reasons beyond the TV money of Christmas is it's because of this. Because imagine if they started way later and they had these pauses. It's just a really untenable situation. So Yeah. I mean, I could see a pause. I could see maybe shrinking the season, you know, not trying to play out into football territory. It's something that would make sense to me, I guess, is my answer, Anthony, without being able to actually answer the question.
Yeah, I'm equally like, I don't know, man. I don't know. I'd be for shutting the whole thing down, all of it, right? But I'm also like, yo, if you're going to play, play. I don't know what a pause is going to do. This, you pause for 2 weeks, what's going to be different? You're going to come out of it, and it's going to be the same thing. So if you're committed to playing, I don't know. I feel like you should figure it out. I do think they need to step up their protocols and their processes. And maybe that's what the 2 weeks is for, is to set some of that stuff up. Maybe that makes sense in that case where it's like, all right, we're going to give everybody these wristbands and, you know, oxygen meters and all that other stuff they had in the bubble. But it's like, all right, I mean, do you really expect to not have this stuff happen? And like, you've watched it in college football, you've watched it in the NFL, you saw it in baseball. It's like, this is what's going to happen when you try to play sports in this thing. So either you got the stomach for it or you don't.
I do think, though, I mean, there's so much more unknown than there is known, and there might not have been such an expectation. You could have lulled yourself into the false sense of security in the summer that things were improving. And even if people said that weather has a correlation, I don't know how much that was accepted as the conventional wisdom. And I guess now we're discovering that weather does seem to have a big impact, and it's spreading like crazy. And so maybe they were just optimistic. And the problem for the NBA is that unlike football, unlike baseball, they are indoors. It's just a different, it's a different situation that seems to have more of a chance of having rapid fire spread across the league.
What you think, Slater?
The one thing I do think the NBA should do, if, you know, sure, if they want to do the pause, they can. I think they've built in the schedule to be able to.
Mike Prada tweets, seems to me the NBA has got to either shut down entirely or jump the line on vaccines. I'm having trouble seeing any other realistic alternatives.
You know, if they do decide to play, though, I think just, like, you know, force feed these games in. And, like, sorry, Philadelphia 76ers, you're going to play with seven guys. You're going to play with eight guys. You know, so just like the NFL went, sorry, Denver Broncos, you're going to play a practice squad guy at QB, and you're going to get killed. But it is what it is at this point.
Should the NBA force players to take the vaccine if they get the vaccine?
I don't think you could. I don't think you should, or I'm not even sure you legally can force anybody to. But I have seen somebody, like, it be said that if you do get it compared to if you don't, it will very much matter on, like, the medical protocols you have to go through. You know, you're basically, if you don't get it, you're going to still be on, yeah, you know, the lockdown.
It's like, we're not forcing you to take it, but you have to play in a hazmat suit. That's just how it has to be. Maybe they just make it very inconvenient without technically forcing you, but they're probably going to have some kind of mechanism for incentivizing it to be taken, would be my assumption.
It's odd to be discussing like a 6-4 season.
It's Heinz Ward stuff happening right now. You know, it's like
positivity in Warriors land.
It does feel like Heinz Ward going like, man, that was a good return.
This is a lot different than the summer, though, when there was no vaccine news. There was no, didn't seem to be much of a light at the end of the tunnel. Oh, they better get to the bubble. There does seem to be one in a sense. And if there's not, if somehow like this vaccine rollout doesn't work, like bubble playoffs, like they've shown they can do it. So that's still technically on the table. Maybe you do like a late season bubble pass, but I assume as a globe, we'll be in a lot better situation by then. They just got to get there. And if that means minimizing the schedule from 72 to even down to 60 games, that's okay. A 60 game season is pretty representative, I think.
I would agree, but they need to, God, I always say, you know, if Adam Silver wasn't already bald, he would be bald by now. It is not a fun job to be trying to run the NBA and carry them through this.
Yeah, man, they need to figure out what the Warriors are doing and mimic it across the league.
You know how much different it is walking around Houston right now than it is walking around San Francisco?
Right, right. Yeah. Just live in San Francisco is the answer.
Well, I mean, the spread's happening here, too. I think maybe the Warriors are just very diligent. They're not inviting people up to their rooms, you know? Maybe they're just adherent in a way.
Yeah, it's just weird that they've avoided it to this point. Like, something.
Didn't a player get it twice, they said, or has tested positive twice? I found that interesting when I saw some report on that. Made me wonder who.
the same player tested twice?
Well, I know Durant had the situation where he got it over the summer.
Durant had
and he's still registering antibodies, but he must have been around somebody who tested positive, and they made him go to quarantine and miss like four games. And it sounded like he wasn't too pleased about it because he has the antibodies, but they're being careful. At least on that part of the protocols, they're being careful.
I don't have an ethical problem with the NBA taking the vaccine, by the way, or like jumping the line, as they say, because it seems like the issue with rollouts is not about supply. It's about just, I don't know, disorganization. A private company managing to get 500, especially if they're traveling all over the country, so that poses a risk to everybody that they can spread it everywhere. I have no issue with that, I guess I will say. I will go on record saying I have no issue with the NBA getting 500 vaccines of its own.
Marcus, take us out. This Lakers got to go do some stuff.
Andrew Wiggins is the truth, and you guys better get on board right now.
So Ethan just went on record with a vaccine opinion. Will you go on record and say Andrew Wiggins is going to...
I have no vaccine
takes. All-star? Is that you're on the record today?
I really don't even know which one's more controversial.
Right, yeah, nah. No, Wiggins is not going to be an all-star.
Oh, that's not truth. That. Truth is all-star, man.
If you really believe...
Not, yeah, truth. I can't be talking about truth and all that. Yeah, my bad. Nope, no all-star.
But maybe, truth in is, these he's, conditions,
he's
maybe.
As Harrison Barnes.
Maybe.
He's living up to the expectations of Harrison Barnes. That's the truth, baby. We are out of here. Next time, the Warriors will be 15-4. The next podcast, apparently.
3 months from now.
Until next time, check us out on Warriors All 82, which should be All 72, but at some point, two of us will be on there. Otherwise, we will holler at y'all next week.
Let's not stand on ceremony here, Mr. Wayne.